3rd, 1979, the legendary rock band The Who played Riverfront Coliseum in Cincinnati. And the vast majority of the roughly 18,000 tickets that were sold were something called general admission, also known as, you guessed it, festival seating. It's a real misnomer, folks, on two counts, because there's nothing festive about it, and it usually does not get you a seat. It gets you standing room only, wherever you can find it. So back then, at the Who concert, it was a freezing cold night. Thousands pressed against the arena doors, trying to get in, trying to get warm, and trying to rock out. And in Cincinnati, as in Houston, people were crushed in slow motion. 11 people died. My next guest spent much of the 70s on the Cincinnati City Council before becoming the city's mayor and then launching a long television career. Jerry Springer, thank you for coming on tonight. Thought of you as I reread the Rolling Stone article from 40 plus years ago. Why?
Yeah.
If this happened then, why, Jerry, could it have possibly happened now?
Well, the truth is it probably isn't an excuse, because people now know, particularly the people who run these concerts and have these festivals, they know what it's going to be like. At the situation in Cincinnati, I remember I had introduced legislation which would prohibit festival seating in an indoor arena, because the Who concert was in the Riverfront Coliseum, which was indoors. And I didn't want festival seating, because that puts a premium, since no one's assigned a particular seat, to getting there early. And the doors were going to open, I don't know, maybe 6-7 o'clock in the evening, but people were getting there at 3 in the afternoon because they wanted to be up front. So you're basically incentivizing the crowd to get there early. So the crush took place even before the concert ever started. Before the doors opened, people were crushed to death. As you said, 11 people tragically died. We should have learned something from that. If you're going to have a massive event where thousands and thousands and thousands of people, you can control it. Even if you're going to have, let's say, a mash pit, then control the number of people that are allowed to be in a fenced-off mash pit. Have enough security there. We had, now I admit times have changed, but you weren't allowed to bring in alcohol and you weren't allowed to bring in any drugs. And there were only 6 arrests made for kids that brought in the drugs. I understand times have changed, but still the people that run these cars, now the promoters, they want to have festival seating. And the reason is, if you have festival seating, you can charge everyone the same price. If you assign tickets, then obviously you can charge the people sitting in the upper deck as much money as you would charge the people down in front. So therefore, they say everyone pays the same. So they make a ton of money by this. And the premium is on getting there early, getting up front, getting involved in the hoopla. And invariably, people are going to die or at least get hurt. And it's not like we don't know this stuff happens. And that's why, look, I'm not here pointing fingers. I wasn't there. It's not my business. But I do wonder, if you're going to have this event, particularly if you have it every year, for gosh sakes, what is the security meeting like the few days before the concert? What was set
That's
up?
A good
were
point.
The fences
and,
set
well,
up? The
mayor actually spoke with the artist right before the event about crowd safety. And I'm so glad you brought that up. After the break, Jerry, you're also a lawyer, which people should know because you know of what you speak. But I do want to talk to you about this this nexus. I had no idea this existed, Jerry. When I read this article, I dialed you right away. There was a man who tried to get tickets to that Who concert and was mad because they sold out so fast that he had to do the rush seating. And he wrote you a letter because you were on council. This was 3 years prior. He'd been at another concert like that. And you were the only city councilor who wrote him back and said you were going to do something about it. And yet still, the city council just couldn't. Well, there you are. That's why you're here with me, to remind you of the good old days, what, 43 years ago.
You do great work, Jerry, Ashley. How you found that out.
When we come back, We're going to talk a little bit about that, but I'm also going to tap you for your legal expertise, because a duty of care is not just a slogan. It is real. And if you're going to invite 50,000 kind souls into your venue, you have that duty of care. More with Jerry in just a moment. Back now with my special guest, the former Cincinnati City Councilman and former Mayor Jerry Springer. He lived through the Travis Scott Astroworld nightmare decades ago when 11 people were crushed to death at a Who concert in his beloved town of Cincinnati. So I got the letter that was sent to you 3 years before that Who concert. A rock fan who used to go to concerts with his wife all the time. He wrote, not only you, but he had carbon paper. Remember that? He carbon copied the city council, the city's public safety director. His name was Richard Klopp. We actually tried to find him, and he has since died. But he said this: concerts that I have attended were both sold out on a festival seating or general admission basis. What this means for the promoter is more money. For the concert goer, this means he'll probably have to sit in the aisles or on the floor, jeopardizing his safety and the safety of others. If a fire or general panic were to break out, many, many people would be trampled to death. You were the only person who responded. You were the only person who tried to do something about it. And then 3 years later, you weren't on city council anymore. You weren't the mayor. And this horrifying 11 death incident happened, and then they did ban the festival seating, but Jerry, they overturned the ban 24 years later. Why do you think they would do that?
Oh, I didn't even realize they overturned the ban. I'll have to talk to them. Yeah. No, I don't understand why they would. It's, well, you know, if you're going to have a huge outdoor area, you're just not going to have seats. So that I understand, but in the alternative, knowing, and we certainly have a history of what these events can turn out, and it can be not just concerts, sporting events, political events, all kinds of things. The security has to be clear. You have to recognize what you're inviting in. It's music, it's young people, they're gonna get a little bit wild, they're gonna get a little bit crazy. Some of them could be smoking, some of them could be drinking. That is to be expected. So when these cases, if they get to court, when they go to court and they use a reasonable standard of proper care, part of what will determine what is a reasonable standard is there may be a different standard if you're going to have a crowd at a church meeting than there's going to be if you're going to have a crowd at a rock concert. So the
but let me tell you something.
I
found out today that at this Astroworld event, they actually had something called a life safety plan. It was 54 some odd pages, and it outlined showstop procedure, safety spotters and risk assessment, adequate policing and paramedics and barricade configurations, signage. But honestly, all of that meant nothing. It felt as though these safety spotters may not have been on raised platforms where they could see exactly what was happening in the danger spots and then radio immediately to the management and to the artist, stop, lights up, shut it down, get the authorities in place to save people. This is where I say liability is everywhere. And I could see it going all the way down from the venue to the artist and management to even the security staff. Do you agree?
Well, it's entirely possible. Obviously, we have to find out who did what or didn't do what. You can have the greatest plan set out. And what you're telling me is that in this case, there was a plan. What failed is the execution. And then you have to figure out who that was working there or organized this didn't follow the plan. So it's not enough just to say, well, we were ready for this, but then when it happened, we didn't perform. And that, you know, the court system will figure that out. That is going to be dependent on the testimony, on, as you said, yeah, the visual evidence, the evidence of the people that were on the ground. But it just seems to me that you can have 58 pages written down, but just looking at the pictures before the crush started, you know, the question has to be, what's going to happen if the people in the back start pushing to the front? You know, what are you going to have, 12 security guys run there and try and stop it? I mean, it's almost...
And clearly, you need more. I mean, you just need more. You need a better barricade plan. But you know something? I'm so glad that you have this perspective of having lived through this with the Who concert in Cincinnati and then seeing this 40-some-odd years later. I just wish that... I hope you and I aren't going to have this conversation again. I hope we have another conversation about something.
I do hope I'm back in 40 years. I do hope I'm back in 40 years.
Of course you will be, Jerry.
I'm
going to
look great at 120. At 120, I am going to be hot. Oh,
Jerry, thank you. Thank you so much for being here
tonight.
You're great.
Thanks,
Ashley.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Jerry Springer joining us. I mean, it really has a lot of perspective having had that connection to the Who concert disaster.